Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 22, 2020. Several people were killed in the contested Abyei region.
The attack resulted in the death of about 32 people, among them about 9 children. Wounded people are 24, among them also 9 children. This is the last statistic we had.
And students stage a riot at the University of Juba's main campus.
They entered the exams room, people have exams, and then they saw all the papers of those who are sitting. Some are exempted not to sit. They are not like to sit for the exam because they clear their school fees.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than a dozen people were shot and killed today in an attack by armed men in the disputed Abyei region. The United Nations Interim Force for Abyei, which is working to keep peace in the region, says it has deployed forces to contain the situation. For VOA News, Lucy Pony reports from Nairobi.
Daniel Adekera, spokesperson of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, says the early morning attack on the Ngok Dinka community left several casualties.
The number we have as of now confirmed by our troops is 15 people dead, 3 children missing, 25 wounded, and 19 houses burnt down.
Adekera tells South Sudan in Focus the attack is likely a reprisal attack and an investigation is underway.
From all indications, the perpetrators are from the Mysteria tribe because 3 days ago there was a similar incident in the same place where 3 Mysterias were killed purportedly by the Dinka. So this seems to have been a repressor attack from the Mysteria tribe. But we are investigating further to confirm.
Adekera says the two communities have been engaged in meetings ahead of the dry season migration period to ensure that peace prevails.
The meetings we arranged was to preempt escalation, as it were, or any incidents of violence. Because normally, during migration, we hold these pre-migration meetings just to prepare them and get them to understand how they want to do that to be peaceful. So far, the meetings have been peaceful, so this has come to a surprise to us, as a matter of fact.
He says UNISFA troops have been deployed in the area to control movements and contain the situation from escalating. However, Abyei's chief administrator, Kuala Lor Kuol, said more people were killed in the attack.
There was an attack on the village called Kolom. It's about 12 kilometers north of Abyei. This morning, a group of the Mysteria attacked the village at around 7:10 minutes. The attack resulted into the death of about 32 people killed, among them about 9 children. Wounded people are 24, among them also 9 children. This is the last statistic we had. And then about 22 houses were burned.
Mysteria leaders could not be reached for comment. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi, Kenya.
The University of Juba board has postponed all exam schedules affected by a riot on campus today after university officials blocked several students who have not paid school fees from taking their exams. The board released a statement later saying exam schedules for next week will not be affected. The board is asking students to clear their outstanding fees by this Saturday, and those who cannot do so should report to their respective deans. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Students at the University of Juba's College of Medicine stormed examination halls, broke chairs and tables, and destroyed examination papers in protest of what they say is a decision by Juba University Administration to prevent them from writing their examinations. Within minutes of the protest, there was heavy police deployment at the university's main campus to try to calm the situation. Students say their parents did not pay their tuition fees because the government has not paid their salaries in several months, making it impossible for them to come up with tuition money. Oniba David is a lecturer at the university's College of Arts and Humanity and was in the classroom when students stormed his building.
They entered the exams room, people have exams, and then they saw all the papers of those who are sitting. Some are exempted not to sit. They are not like to sit for the exam because they clear their school fees.
According to a new fee structure, medical students are expected to pay 90,000 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent to $300 on the black market. Guy Marot Ball, a third-year female student at the School of Arts and Humanities, says university administrations issued an alert about overdue tuition fees and a demand for payment on Saturday, which was too late for many students.
On Monday, we have started the exam, and we have been allowed to sit for the first paper, but the other papers, if you didn't get the money that you're supposed to pay, you will not be allowed to sit for the exam. Now the student, they are not complaining about the money, but they are complaining about the short time that they have been given. Like a day, it was even as a holiday. Saturday was a holiday.
Ball says the university should allow the students to take the exams and then make them pay later.
They are complaining about the period of time, the short period of time giving to them. And some people can get money next week. But what if you miss two exams? That means that you cannot study for the next. And what is the guarantee if I didn't pay today and I didn't come for this exam? Will you give me the exam next week when I come with my money?
Emmanuel Atit, a fourth-year student of Arts and Humanities at Juba University, says the students' decision to riot was wrong and that university education is not free. But Atit says in order for students to pay fees on time, the government must pay civil servants on time.
What I know, free education, they mean is for primary school and secondary school. And university level, it is your responsibility. And now because you are mature, you know what is education is. And you know the importance of education. It means you have to pay for it. But anyway, according to the situation and economic crisis in the country, and in which the government itself is not paying the civil servant for sometimes eight months, there are some students here whose family are working with the government, and their family are not getting their salary in time.
Following today's protest, the Dean's Board met and released a statement saying all exams scheduled affected by the disruption have been postponed and will take place near the end of the current exams timetable. The timetable for next week will remain as is. It is said students with outstanding fees are advised to clear them by this Saturday, and those that cannot should report to their respective deans by Saturday so that solutions are found. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Authorities in Torit State have arrested several people involved in illegal tree logging in Magui County. Last month, the state launched a crackdown on the practice, codenamed Operation Save Our Forests, aimed at saving natural forests from extinction in the county. Onen Walter Solomon was in Torit last week and has this report for VOA from Juba.
We apprehended seven illegal loggers. These are mostly Ugandan citizens. We have also impounded one truck full of logs, then one machine, then a crane.
That's Akile Maridi, Torit State Minister for Agriculture and Forestry. He says the suspects were transferred to Torit Prison for further interrogation. Maridi says most of the illegal logging takes place in Lerwa, Lobone and Winkibul of Magui and Ayachi counties. He says state authorities closed the South Sudan-Uganda border crossing points at Winkibul, Lobone and Ngomoromo, where logging companies typically transport illegal logs. Maridi says those border points will remain closed until the illegal logging stops. The illegal operation has become big business in Magui since a number of local officials are in on the scheme. Maridi says many loggers cut down trees without acquiring government permits. A former logger who prefers to be identified only as Jimmy for fear of reprisals from authorities says he recently hit a colleague's truckload of logs impounded by Torit State authorities, even though he followed the right procedures.
Before going to the forest, you meet the landlord, If you accept this area, you go to the Department of Forestry. If the authority allow you, they approve your document. You register the machine that you are going to work with it. After registration of the machine, then you are free to start cutting under supervision of the forestry department. There are forest guards in all this area, supervising which tree to be put down.
Dorit lawmaker Piero Tim, who represents Magui County, says he authored legislation last November calling on the state to halt illegal logging. Otim warns that entire forest will be gone in the next few months if illegal logging isn't stopped.
There are no forest guards to know the quantity that has been approved. You find that they are even going to do excess because there is nobody who is doing the supervision in the field. And that is why you will find that there is a lot of illegal logging because it involves this approved document.
One of the suspected illegal loggers identified as Katumba, whose truckload was impounded by state authorities last week, is still negotiating with authorities to release his truck, according to Jimmy.
He has been fined £400,000. He paid to the department who came from the state that they came to supervise to see what is going on. The receipt is not given. That one, they don't give receipts.
Otim says, besides the problem of certain state officials colluding with companies that run the illegal logging business, state revenue collectors often misappropriate the tax they collect from logging companies.
One of our son of the area of Owingibul, Wajaras, was arrested in Uganda. He crossed with this gun, he killed animal, and he also has a refugee card. So this is where the community approved for bailing this man because these people helped to get this man out from prison in Uganda.
Maridi says lost state revenue should concern state officials just as much as the depletion of trees in local forests. The report says the panel continues to investigate the pricing of and trade in timber in territories controlled by SSPDF. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, President Trump says he plans to widen the U.S. travel ban. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Can you forgive and forget?
It depends. It depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Donald Trump said today he plans to add what he referred as a couple of countries to the controversial U.S. travel ban list to bolster his country's security. Trump gave a brief statement at the economic summit in Davos, Switzerland, but provided few details.
You see what's going on in the world. Our country has to be safe. So we have a very strong travel ban, and we'll be adding a few countries to it.
About the region or the country?
Well, it's going to be announced very shortly.
Media reports say seven countries, including four from Africa, were tentatively on the list, but they say the list was not final and could change, and some of the countries could face restrictions that fall off bans. Officials say the countries under considerations have failed to comply with security requirements, including biometric information sharing and counterterrorism measures. The Wall Street Journal and Politico listed Nigeria, Sudan, Eritrea, Tanzania, along with Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Myanmar. Under the current version of the ban, citizens of Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, as well as Venezuelan officials and their relatives, are blocked from obtaining a large range of U.S. immigrant and non-immigrant visas. One of the most senior foreign fighters with the terrorist group Al-Shabaab says he defected recently from the group and is now in Mogadishu with the Somali government. Zubair Al-Muhajir says he traveled from London to join the group in 2006 and rose through the ranks until becoming a member of the Al-Shabaab Shura, a consultative council. Zubair Al-Muhajir, who is originally from Ivory Coast, tells the investigative dossier, a VOA Somali program, that he fell out of favor with the group in 2013 when he was arrested and jailed.
I was in the leadership in the Shura Council since the creation of the movement in the beginning. I think it was 2008 or 9, somewhere like that.
When did you leave the organization?
I left the organization in 2013 when they arrested me.
And then what happened? Where did you go?
I was 3 years in prison, and after 3 years, they released me, and they sent me in the north of Somalia. I stayed there for 3 years, and then I decided to defect.
And why did you defect?
I defected because Al-Shabaab, they are lying to the Muslims and to the world. They are claiming to implement the Sharia, which is not true, because I know some incidences where they went against the Sharia. They are using the Sharia just to betray the people and fool them and lie to them. But the reality of the action is totally against the Sharia. They are killing innocent people and they are lying to the people.
When did you take the final decision and what was the single incident that drove you out?
I left 2 months ago, and the incident that pushed me to leave was I had an argument with them about paying of zakah and taxes. I showed them that if they want to take taxes from me, I'm ready to give them the taxes, but if they want zakah from me, I'm not among the people who pay the zakah, you understand?
Tell me exactly what do you want the international community and the Somalis to know about Al-Shabaab?
Okay, first of all, I want the Muslims to know the reality of Al-Shabaab. The claims that they are making of implementing the Sharia, this is just lies. And to the world, what I want to say, especially to the Somali government, I want to tell them that they have to take the issue of Shabaab seriously. Otherwise, they will still kill the innocent people and put it on the name of the Sharia, you understand? So we have to take the fight with Al-Shabaab on the ideology side, because this is the side which is boosting Al-Shabaab. If Al-Shabaab people, if the people realize that the ideology is wrong with Islamic proofs, I think Al-Shabaab, they will no longer be there for a long time.
That is the question I wanted to ask you, which is, why is it difficult to defeat Al-Shabaab?
The reason is difficult because Al-Shabaab, their fight is based on religion. This is a religious fight. It's not a political fight. But the problem is they have a wrong understanding of the religion. So based on that wrong understanding of the religion, they are carrying this fight.
What's your plan now?
My plan now is to carry on to speak against Al-Shabaab. And I wish the Muslims can help me for that. If they don't, I'm going to carry on by myself, because this is a religious duty for me.
That's Zubair Al-Muhajir, a former Al-Shabaab foreign fighter and now a defector. He was speaking with reporter Harun Maruf of the VOA Somali service. Clashes between separatist groups in Cameroon have killed at least 6 fighters, with one group allegedly abducting close to 40 rebels of another. Separatist leaders have blamed the clashes on the infiltration by Cameroon's military, but the military says they are part of an internal rivalry over power among the separatist groups. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé. Cameroonian rebel leader Chacha posted a video clip on social media Sunday calling for all separatists to unite under his Southern Cameroon Restoration Forces after clashes between rebel groups. In the video, Chacha is dressed in a red suit with a long black cross on the back and standing with four supporters, all armed with rifles. He says if anybody attempts to betray their struggle to gain independence, he, Chacha, will kill such a traitor as he is killing Cameroon soldiers that have been sent by President Biya to eliminate true separatist fighters. Cameroon's military says the self-proclaimed general posted the video after he killed several members of competing rebel groups. Chacha admitted to killing other separatists. Villagers on Saturday found six bodies in Milouf village in northwestern Cameroon. Local media and the Catholic Church in Cameroon report that Chacha has abducted close to 40 rebel fighters who he accused of helping the military. Tapang Aivotanku is the U.S.-based spokesperson of the Anglophone Defense Forces, ADF, another Cameroon rebel group. Speaking via a messaging app, he said the abducted and killed fighters were ADF. Tanku said the clashes between rebel groups fighting to separate the English-speaking regions from the rest of French-speaking Cameroon played into the hands of the military.
Our soldiers who were killed were initially kidnapped by Chacha, and Chacha went on to kill them. So it is a war crime, and it is strictly a crime against humanity and a violation of the Geneva Conventions. And this is exactly what the regime of neighboring Cameroon wants to see in Ambazonia. It violates the Geneva Conventions for the respect of prisoners of war.
Separatists have been fighting to establish a state they call Ambazonia since 2016. Tanku accused Cameroon's military of infiltrating rebel groups to instigate the separatists in fighting. But the military says the clashes represent a rivalry for power among the separatist groups. Brigadier General Valenka is commander of Cameroon's military forces fighting against the separatists.
I want to issue a strong warning to the so-called generals, the fake generals, Chacha, Tiger, Field Marshal, and all the rest. We already know their hideouts, their whereabouts. We're going to step up military operations, and if they don't lay down their weapons, we are going to strike and crush them.
Clashes between Cameroon's rebel groups have intensified in the past 2 months, with a number of attacks reported in the northwest and southwest. The Bamenda Center for Conflict Resolution's Innocent Fomo says the infighting may mark the beginning of the end to the separatist conflict. He says many people in the two regions are losing faith in the struggle for independence.
The whole issue now is very confusing. They say they are fighting for the Anglophones, and now they are fighting themselves, and even the Anglophones is terrible. A lot of people have fled away from the region because of the kidnappings and asking for ransom, and they are the Amber fighters kidnapping the people.
Since December, several villages in Cameroon's Anglophone West have launched assaults on rebel camps over attacks on civilians and looting villages. The angry villagers say they do not know who to trust, as they say the military commits similar crimes against them. The separatist conflict has killed about 3,000 people, many of them villagers, caught up in the fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of human rights activist Tito Elia Magoti and his co-accused Theodore Giani. The government charged both Tito and Theodore, an IT expert working with a private company, with leading organized crime, money laundering, and being in possession of a computer program with plans of committing an offense. A court adjourned proceedings against the two until February 5th. The Human Rights Group Coalition says the government violated the country's laws by detaining both men for over 72 hours before bringing them to court, and police gave conflicting reasons for detaining them. Critics say the move was meant to intimidate and harass those opposed to the administration, but supporters of the government reject the accusation. Onesimo Olengurumwa, the national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition, says his group supports calls by Amnesty International for the immediate release of the two activists.
Yes, of course, we were in line and also support the Chief Justice's statement that issued last year, lamenting on the delays of cases that involve people who have been arrested without a proper investigation. Because we believe before you arrest someone, you might have gone to the level of at least 50% sure of what you are going to do as far as arrest and prosecutions are concerned. But the main challenge is that most of the cases of people that involve economic and money laundering cases are still in court 1 or 3 or 4 years at some time. So our call is that let them speed up or fast track investigation, or the Director of Public Prosecution have authority to release them pending investigation.
The government is charging Tito and Theodore for leading an organized crime, possession of a computer program designed for the purpose of committing an offense. These are grievous charges that are unbailable. What do you say to that?
Yeah, of course. These are economic and money laundering offenses are currently unbailable. But our concern is that the provisions that curtail the right to bail are unconstitutional. We have even two cases in court challenging the requirement to use the computer proceeding, and the other one challenging the denying the restriction of bail on such kind of offenses. Actually, our call is that let the court have power to decide who should be given bail or who should be denied bail.
Amnesty International is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of Tito Theodore. Now, some people are saying that more international pressure should be brought on the government in order to stop these acts of what they call persecution of those who are opposed to the government. What is your organization's stance on this call?
We are always in support of international solidarity when it comes to issues of human rights violations, because human rights are universal. And whatever that is happening in Tanzania can have impact in neighboring countries, can have impact to the global societies, because this has been the long time practice and it has been sometimes producing good results where government officials have been started negotiations to various international forums to address some of the issues that have been raised jointly by local and international organizations.
That's Onesimo Olengurumwa, the national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with VOA's Peter Kloti from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. That brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song "You Are Not Alone" by Kay Danks.
I got physical, lyrical on pen and paper. I put my flow on the line to express what I got. There's no time for wartime, for G4s and AKs, 21 years. Same struggle, same pain. The movement continues, no pain, no gain. We clean you out in God Almighty name. The source is my own, man, I love this place. The source is my own, yeah, I love this place. I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese, bone tall, bone free, to be what I can be. I raise myself high and up above. This musical content is the best that I can give. You thought you locked me up, hear the padlock and the key. I choose my life and everything in it. A rap for freedom, a rap for peace, man. A rap for the reason, so that Southern Sudan's man.
You've been listening to Kay Danks with the song "You're Not Alone." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope to meet you back here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
This is Bastu. I come with forces like the great military. My country knows that I'm here for them. Any day, any time, I walk with them. In the time of change,
I live like a citizen. I am a citizen, making a country of freedom and strength. G-O-S-S, the source of success.